mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the Findlay City Schools are dealing with a revenue shortfall that has created a significant budget deficit. Superintendent Dr. Andy Hatton discusses the strategies the district is already using and considering to cut the red ink. Also this morning, lowering the cost of life-saving but expensive medication has been a big part of the healthcare reform narrative. One federal program that's been doing that for more than 30 years now has some critics saying it is in need of reform itself. And welcome summer! We have the scoop on the latest fashion styles for weekends away, social events, or even staying cool at work. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, June 20th, 2024. It is the first day of summer today. It is officially the first day of summer, or it will be. 4:51 p.m. is the exact time of the summer solstice when the seasons will change officially. Of course, that's the astronomical first day of summer. The meteorological first day of summer was back on the 1st of June. And of course, Mother Nature all week has been saying, has been telling us in no uncertain terms, I'm in charge here. I say when summer starts. So she's on her own calendar. But anyway, happy summer now officially to you. Kroger is sharing a cool treat with their customers to celebrate the official start of the summer season. Kroger is giving away 45,000 pints of their Kroger brand ice cream. A limited time voucher is available today only while supplies last. And to download the coupon for the free pint of ice cream, you can visit their website, freekrogericecream.com. I checked it out. I'm thinking, is this a scam, freekrogericecream.com? But it does. It takes you to a special spot on the official Kroger website where you can get the coupon and use that if you are one of the first 45,000 people to get the coupon. So freekrogericecream.com. You're welcome, America. Let's see here. This is maybe kind of related to that. You don't want to gorge out on ice cream, especially with your kids, because, you know, we got to watch our waistline. A federal task force is recommending intensive counseling for children struggling with obesity. Intensive counseling for children struggling with obesity. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force published its recommendations on Tuesday and is calling for behavioral interventions for kids age 6 and up with a high body mass index. Now, I know that this is probably a good idea from a medical standpoint, but aren't there really some serious overtones of big brother government, you know, I don't know, some of the verbiage in this? Intensive counseling for children, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, calling for behavioral interventions for kids age 6 and over. I don't know. It's just very, Orwellian verbiage to that, I guess. The new guidelines replace their 2017 guidance that only recommended that children be screened for obesity. So now they're taking this one step further. The new report claims that nearly 1 in 5 U.S. kids is obese, and that rate is even higher among minorities, Latino, Black, and Native American children, as well as children from lower-income families. So they want behavioral intervention, intensive behavioral intervention for kids who are obese. I'm thinking, though, because this story jumped out at me on the Newswire this morning, I'm thinking that maybe it won't be long, we won't have to worry about that. Researchers from the University of York used artificial intelligence to predict tomorrow's favorite dishes, the favorite food dishes of the future. Okay? And if we continue in the direction that we're going, I'm not sure I want to live this long. Experts asked the AI chatbot to create what dinner would look like as we move toward more sustainable meals. The menu in the year 2054 includes lab-grown steaks, cricket salad, and spaghetti with meatballs, quote-unquote meatballs, made out of aquatic plants. These meals are filled with protein and have lower carbon footprints. The last 30 years, we have seen scientific leaps into more sustainable produce, which were unimaginable as recently as 1994, according to Bob Doherty of the platform Fix Our Food. So that is what the sustainable meal will look like in 2054. Lab-grown steaks, cricket salad, and spaghetti with meatballs made out of aquatic plants. The year 2054. So that's what we have to look forward to. I read that and I'm thinking to myself, thank goodness I'll be dead by then. I won't have to worry about it, but I feel for my grandkids. That's what I'm saying. Like I said, maybe the good side, the upside is maybe we don't need such intensive behavioral interventions for the kids today, because by the time they get to 2054, they won't have to worry about it. They're not going to get fat. They're not even going to want to eat. Let's see. which is kind of interesting, because this item that I saw says Americans under the age of 40 are wealthier than other generations, like boomers and the silent generation, at the same age. So those who are under 40 today are wealthier than the boomers and the silent generation were at that same age. Data from the Federal Reserve finds that by the end of 2023, so the end of last year, the average wealth of American households under the age of 40 was around $260,000. In 2010, after adjusting for inflation, the number was just $100,000. So we've more than doubled that just in the past decade, not even decade and a half. It says this means millennials are currently set to become the richest generation in the next 20 years. The richest generation. So we'll have money, but we'll just go hungry. Just more proof that money can't buy happiness, right? We're going to be rich, but we're going to be eating lab-grown steaks and cricket salads. Let's see here. A couple of other items among the first things you need to know this morning. The most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. A summer league baseball team in Oregon is now the first sports team in the U.S. to sell cannabis-infused refreshments at their ballgames. Cannabis-infused refreshments. The seltzer drinks will be available in passion fruit and lemon flavors, and they will be fused with CBD. Let's see here. It is the Portland Pickles Summer League baseball team in Oregon. They say that the city Parks and Recreation Department signed off on the plan, gave them the thumbs up. So they are going to be selling the cannabis-infused beverages at their games this summer. So you can go and get pickled at the Pickles games. But I see, you know, this is, you know, going to open the floodgates, I would think. If it works there, I can say, of course, you will have to be age 21 or over to purchase the drinks, but it can't be long now before other teams will follow in their footsteps. The Portland Pickles, which, by the way, may be one of the best team names anywhere. The Portland Pickles. Let's see here. And finally this morning, lastly among the first things that you need to know, another great celestial event will be visible from Earth very soon, apparently. NASA scientists call it a once-in-a-lifetime event the explosion of a star 3,000 years ago. The explosion will be visible for a few days between now and September, burning bright enough to appear as a new star in the sky. And yet, it is actually light from an explosion in deep space 3,000 years ago. And you know how fast light travels, right? So think about how far out in deep space that must be for the light from 3,000 years ago just now to be visible on planet Earth. It says a light year is the distance light travels in 1 year, so scientists have concluded the so-called blaze star explosion happened 3,000 years ago. So, wow, that is incredibly impressive. The thing is, how do you identify which star it is? Well, it's a new star in the sky. Okay, point out that new star for me. Is it going to be bright enough to see, like, in town? You have to go out into the country somewhere to see the star? Or is it going to be, you know, visible to the naked eye? Is it going to? I don't know. I don't know all of the details. It's just what it said on the newswire. But I'll tell you what, the past 12 months or so have been, well, heck, just the past 3 or 4 months have been pretty incredible celestially. We had the eclipse, we had the Northern Lights, and now we have this 3,000-year-old star explosion that we can watch for. And just if we can figure out which star it actually is. But there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly cloudy today, a chance of showers or a storm, a high in the 90s. Partly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid-70s. Findlay City Schools has named the new director and assistant director of the award-winning Findlay First Edition Show Choir. The school district says David Coolidge will serve as the fine arts specialist for Findlay City Schools and the next director of Findlay First Edition. David is a graduate of Findlay High School and a former FFE member. And the school district says Mary Beth Coolidge will serve as the next vocal music director at Findlay High School, as well as assistant director for FFE. The school district says Mrs. Coolidge is an accomplished professional vocalist with significant training and experience at the collegiate level of performance. Former longtime FFE director Kevin Manley left Findlay City Schools for Arlington Local Schools, where he'll be teaching vocal music next school year. Get more in the story on our website. State officials say to beware of a scam involving housing vouchers.
Scammers are using the Housing Finance Agency's logo and address. The agency says they do not give out housing vouchers.
It's really unfortunate. A lot of folks are in need of housing and are in search for safe and affordable housing.
The only place to apply for a voucher is the Ohio Metropolitan Housing Authority's website. You could report the scam to the Attorney General's office.
ONN's Clay Gordon reporting. Raise the Bar Hancock County and the University of Findlay have partnered to announce the 2024 Summer Educator Experience in Transportation, a unique professional development opportunity for Ohio-licensed educators in Northwest Ohio. They say this innovative hybrid graduate course, along with in-person local business tours, is designed to immerse educators in the transportation industry, providing them with valuable insights and tools to enhance their teaching practices used to strengthen the local upcoming workforce. The program's designed to be beneficial to educators across various grade levels and content areas. Get more information on this initiative in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com. Matt Demchek for 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now our cover story this morning. Findlay City School Superintendent Dr. Andy Hatton is with us on the line. And quite a few things to talk about. Dr. Hatton, thanks very much for taking the time. First of all, we appreciate it.
Of course, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Start with the big news. We heard it yesterday that a new director and assistant director for Findlay First Edition have been named. David Coolidge and Mary Beth Coolidge the director and assistant director of FFE moving forward, respectively. I noticed, does the theory of relativity apply in this case?
Well, we're very excited to have the Coolidges. They come with abundant experience. And Mary Beth is actually also going to, first and foremost, we were looking for a vocal music director for our high school, and she is going to take the reins of that program. So we are very excited.
Mr. Coolidge, a former FFE, an FFE alumni, so good to bring full circle to the group.
Correct. He's a Findlay High School graduate, FFE alum, and has vast experience. I think he even has some Broadway or off-Broadway experience as well. So they are just top-shelf people, first and foremost, and they bring vast experience to the table for our kids.
Now, obviously, earlier this school year, there was some controversy involving Findlay First Edition. I don't want to open up old wounds necessarily, but everybody is familiar with what happened earlier in the year. Was the change in leadership unexpected, or was this pretty much what you expected to happen at the end of the school year?
Well, no, it was not expected, you know, we're just at this point looking forward to move forward and do the best that we can for our kids and for that program.
So let me give you the opportunity to sort of toot your own horn a little bit. I know just a couple of weeks ago, the district mailed out to residents the Quality Profile 2024. I know I got mine in the mailbox. Some really good information in there, including some impressive numbers in terms of academic achievement and some of the accomplishments of the Findlay City Schools over the past academic year.
Yeah, I'm glad. First of all, I'm glad you received that in the mail. That's good to hear. We wanted to, put together a quality profile because, the state report card doesn't tell our whole story. That's just a snapshot in time, and it really limits things to, to testing and that sort of thing. So we wanted the opportunity to share the story in Findlay City Schools around our three values of excellence, opportunity, and true belonging. And so we believe that, in that first iteration of our quality profile, we wanted to get that story out, and we believe that the community can expect that on an annual basis.
Now, the news also came out about a week or so ago that the district has an operating budget shortfall of in excess of $1 million. And I want to dig into this a little bit. How does this happen, first of all? I guess that's the biggest question. I know there are a lot of things we could talk for a long time about all of the different dynamics at play, but kind of boil it down to the basics in layman's terms. How does it happen that the district ends up $1 million in the red?
Well, sure, and I'm glad that you asked that. So basically, in school funding, there are three buckets of money. And one of them is, bond money to build buildings. The other is permanent improvement to maintain those facilities and pay for things that are going to last 5 years or more. This is operating. This is how we pay the bills day to day and how we pay and compensate our people. And it has actually been 19 and a half years since Findlay City Schools has had a cost of living increase. We are maintaining academic excellence on a 2004 budget, basically. And so the way that works, Chris, is that in 2004, the voters in Findlay City Schools gave us that cost of living increase based on property taxes. And that is one of the primary ways that schools are funded in the state of Ohio. However, the way it works is when property values go up, our ability to collect goes down so that we're collecting the same amount of money that the voters allowed us in 2004. So there's no mechanism for an increase in, cost of living. So 19 and a half years later, my predecessors and previous administrations and boards have done a great job to live within our means, which means at times, we have to make cuts. We have to live within that budget. There was a little bit of a bump in 2020 with the federal ESSER funds, so that we were able to, maintain our expenditures and try to move forward coming out of the pandemic. But that money's running out this fall. And so it is time for us to go back to the public to say we need a cost of living increase.
So I know that there have already been, and this is not necessarily new, there's already been at least one administrative position that has been eliminated. Are there likely to be more?
Well, no, right now we're looking at shifting all of our resources, the resources that we have in operations, closer to students, closer to the classroom. In fact, we're very proud. You know, one of those things that you said in terms of things that we're proud about that the state report card might not always share is that Findlay City Schools ranks second out of 45 similar sized districts from around Ohio in the amount of funds that we spend directly on the classroom and classroom instruction. So what we're doing right now is we're trying to make sure that we maintain that, and we're shifting our human and our financial resources to the classroom so that we're taking care of kids.
So it sounds as though the solution, you've determined that the solution is to go before the voters and ask for another operating levy.
That's correct. The Board of Education has been considering this for the last school year. I was really proud of our Board of Education for being transparent, talking about it at our meetings. In fact, in the last several months, we held two work sessions that were open to the public where the board looked at all of our options, in a way to move forward. We could look at, for example, the state fair funding formula that has a few more years to go in terms of implementation across the state of Ohio. I don't know if you know this, but years ago, back in the late 90s, school funding in the state of Ohio was found unconstitutional three times.
Right.
And so, fortunately, our legislature, bipartisan efforts in the last several years have led to the Fair School Funding Act. But one of the things that they take into consideration there is a local district's ability and capacity to pay for its own public schools. And so they have basically said we are short about $12 million on the overall five-year forecast, right? So actually another thing that's happening to Findlay City Schools going into fiscal year 2025 is we're projected to receive about $800,000 fewer dollars from the state of Ohio. So again, back to the Board of Education, very proud of everything that they've done over the last several months to look and consider this. And they have decided to, yes, be on the ballot in November for an operating levy for an earned income tax. This would be something new for our community, but not new to the area. In fact, Findlay is the only school district in Hancock County that does not have an income tax.
So why was it determined to seek an income tax as opposed to a bump in the traditional property tax?
Right. Because what the Board of Education wanted to do is do what is fair to our citizens here that live within the Findlay City School District. Mm-hmm. Basically, with an earned income tax, we rise and fall together. It would provide inflationary growth, which the property tax does not do. It avoids taxing our retired folks and those that are on fixed incomes. It does not tax unemployment income. And it would just contribute to our overall financial sustainability moving forward. And the hope would be we would, by going with a different income stream, we would be able to intentionally not go back to our voters so frequently.
So obviously it is too late to have this on the November ballot, right? When will voters see this?
Oh, no, this will be on the November.
Oh, it will be on the November ballot.
Yes, sir. It'll be on the November 2024 ballot.
And obviously, as you well know, being in education, a lot of times school levies are a bit of an uphill battle, regardless of how what type of mechanism or the need. A lot of times, this is an uphill battle for schools. It always is, and a lot of times, the public will say, "How are you meeting us halfway? What are you doing? What austerity measures, if you will, are you taking to meet the voters halfway in solving this budget issue?"
Yeah, well, and I totally agree with that sentiment. I mean, no one wants, to see their taxes go up. I don't, you don't, no, nobody wants that. But we also want excellent school. So we want the best for our kids and for our community. And so it is just the way the system is set up that we have to go back to our voters to ask for that cost of living adjustment. And so, you know, the other thing, like I said earlier, I'm really proud of how Finley City Schools has lived within their means over these past 20 years. I mean, the Board of Education, not so you asked about, right, you know, making sure that we're meeting the community halfway.
Mm-hmm.
We are very intentional with the way we are fiscally responsible in this community. We, you know, there was the closing of the Lincoln School, so they have right-sized the district. They closed Trojan Academy. We hired our own substitute teachers internally to save dollars from instead of going outside to a third party. We've actually made cuts over time through just natural attrition. There are certain positions that just have not been backfilled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were very intentional with the use of those federal dollars, but like I said, those are running out. So we will always continue, always, to live within our means to make sure that the preponderance of our operating money is going directly into the classroom for kids.
We will make that the last word for now, but obviously I'm pretty sure that this won't be the last time that we'll talk about it again with this levy issue going to be on the ballot here in the near future. Finley City School Superintendent Dr. Andy Hatton, thanks very much for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Chris, and I hope everybody stays cool out there.
Well, within the longstanding issue of the cost of healthcare, one of the most significant discussions has been how to make lower the cost of prescription medication. And there have been many attempts to do that over the years, one of which is something known as the 340B drug pricing program. But our next guest is among those who say that program is failing to benefit patients and calling on Congress to fix it. Dr. Robert Popovian is Chief Science Policy Officer at the Global Healthy Living Foundation, Senior Healthy Policy Fellow at the Progressive Policy Institute, and founder of Conquest Advisors, a biopharmaceutical and healthcare consulting services firm. First off, Dr. Popovian, what is the 340B drug pricing program?
So thank you for having me on. So the 340B program was created by Congress about 30 years ago. Congressional members got together and they basically said, look, there are hospitals and institutions that are providing a lot of care to uninsured patients and indigent patients, and they need a break. They need resources to be able to serve their communities. And I actually trained in a hospital such as that, so I know exactly what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So what they said is that through congressional action, they said to pharmaceutical companies, these big conglomerates, pharma companies, that, hey, you as the pharma company have to sell your drug at a deep discount to these institutions, and then the institutions can utilize those savings to provide care for these uninsured and indigent patients. So a worthwhile program, it's a federal program that was instituted to really help out communities.
Okay, so it's been around for three decades or more. Why is it suddenly so controversial now?
Well, as any program that we have from a federal side or state side that goes through neglect and there's lack of transparency and accountability, you start seeing creeping of mission creep, where you see individual institutions start to profiteer from the program. And then you have entities like contract pharmacies that are Fortune 10 companies coming into the system and profiting handsomely. So what's happening now is that this program has grown exponentially over the last decade, I would say. Especially it's happened in the last 10 years. And as the program has grown, there's actually less charity care now provided by these institutions than it was 10 years ago. So even though the program has increased in revenue, that means there's more revenue being generated through this program for these institutions, these hospitals are not utilizing this to provide more charity care. And then you have, as I said, these for-profit pharmacy benefit management owned contract pharmacies have gotten involved. Entities like CVS, which you may have heard of, they're in every corner of the country. Institutions like OptumRx, which is part of United Healthcare, Express Scripts, which is part of Cigna, they've gotten involved and they're profiting handsomely. So what has happened over the years is the lack of accountability, lack of transparency, and lack of oversight by Congress has led to entities arbitraging prices, buying low, and then turning around and selling these drugs at a very high profit margins to fully insured patients. So guess who ends up paying for these things? It's employers and employees and individuals like you and I who have fully insured. And these hospitals buy these prices at very low prices and sell it to us at a very high margin.
There are those, though, who say that if you point to the growth of 340B as evidence that it's not working as intended, then you're missing the real issue, that it's grown because more providers are struggling with rising costs and being forced to lean on the program. Isn't that a valid argument?
And it could be. And we don't know that, Chris. And this is why there needs to be better transparency and accountability. Nobody's trying to get rid of the program. Nobody's trying to say the program should go away. We want to strengthen it. We just need, and everything in healthcare in our country, we spend trillions of dollars in healthcare, but we have no idea what value we get out of it. And better transparency and accountability will just fortify it. Look, if we know the money, the revenue generated from this program is actually going back as charity care to support communities that really deserve it, then let it be. Maybe it's a worthwhile program. We don't need to do anything. But when you don't have transparency and when you don't have accountability and you look at the numbers on a macro level and you see the program growing but less charity care being provided, you have to start asking questions about where is this money going. And then you see profit margins and you see disclosures by some of these contract pharmacies, some of these insurers that own these contract pharmacies, these PBMs, that they're using it as profit and they're giving profit warning if anything happens to this program, which is not the way a program like this should exist.
Yeah. So with that in mind, then, how do we get this program back on track and increase that transparency and accountability? What's the key here?
The key is Congress. It's on the federal side. What we need to do is promote federal legislation, which fortunately, it's happening right now, both on the House and the Senate side. There's active legislation that's being debated, which is going to create more oversight. That's all Congress is trying to do. And I don't know how anybody can argue against more transparency. All they're saying is that, look, we're not trying to roll back the program. What we want to know, how much money are you generating and how much money are you putting back in the community? And you, as the contract pharmacy, how much profit are you making off of this drug, these drugs in your contract? So that's all the Congress is trying to do, is create more accountability and transparency to make sure that revenue, we know the amount of revenue and the amount going back to the communities.
One expert in these discussions in Congress, one expert said that the best approach would be patient-centered, where the benefit would follow the patient. Is that viable? I mean, could that work, or would that be a reform that would even be possible?
That's always been my point, is that, look, we don't live in a monolithic communities anymore. You know, we have patients who live in different neighborhoods, and the discount should technically follow the patient, not the institution, because the institution now these days, especially now that there's been mergers and acquisitions,
the institution
may be owned by a very affluent hospital in some other community. And we saw that in certain states that has happened. So, yeah, that would be the ultimate fix if the discount actually follows the patient and not the institution. But I think that's a bridge too far at this point. I think first things first, better transparency, better accountability, and let's see where the money amount is. And then if the money is being utilized correctly by these hospitals and these contract pharmacies, then so be it. Then we're okay. But we don't know that.
Yeah. It's also interesting and worth pointing out, and get real quickly your thoughts on this. The CEO of Genesis Healthcare System, which is based in Eastern Ohio, recently told Congress that without this program, they would not be able to continue to operate. And this is an organization that brought in about $786 million of total patient service revenue last year. But his point was revenue does not equal profit margin. And especially in an industry that is so complex and so difficult to understand as this one, we have to be careful not to equate revenue and profit.
That is absolutely correct. The revenue and profit are two different numbers. So what we need to see is that how much revenue is specifically coming from this program and how much of that revenue that's coming from this program is going back as charity care into the communities.
Yeah.
And I'm very familiar with this institution because they did testify in Congress. And if you look at, I would invite anybody to go to the Pioneer Institute. I work at the Pioneer Institute. It's a non-for-profit think tank in Boston, Massachusetts. We have, anybody can go in, and you can go in and look at this institution's charity care numbers. And what you will see is that the charity care numbers are well below the state average and the federal average that they're talking about. So the question becomes, how much revenue are they generating?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't disagree with the CEO. And how much of that revenue from specifically this program are they putting back into the community?
Yeah. Again, Dr. Robert Papavian is Chief Science Policy Officer of the Global Healthy Living Foundation, as we mentioned, Senior Healthy Policy Fellow of the Progressive Policy Institute, founder of Conquest Advisors. Where do we get more information real quickly?
So besides the Pioneer Institute website, which is you can go to pioneerinstitute.org and learn more about it. There's another website that you can learn more about this program. It's called 340breform.org. And you can go into that website and also learn more about this program and how we can fix it.
Dr. Papavian, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
What can you get for a dollar these days? I mean, a dollar just doesn't go very far. But in this case, you can get a pretty lengthy jail term for a dollar. The story of William Rosell, 33-year-old of North Chicago, who is charged with aggravated robbery after passing a note to a store clerk that he said he had a gun and he wanted money. The clerk reached into her wallet and pulled out a dollar. Mr. Rosell then took the money and fled the scene. Stole exactly $1. He ended up in jail, charged with aggravated robbery. Well, he did threaten to use a gun. And, of course, he was already a fugitive after leaving a halfway house where he was under supervised release for robbing $87,000 from a bank in Waukegan, Illinois. So that might have had something to do with the fact that they brought the hammer down on this guy. It wasn't the dollar that he stole this time. It was the $87,000 of him that they had stolen in the past. Mr. Rosell copped to the theft of the dollar and is now due back in court on July 10th, where the judge is not likely to be sympathetic. Can't get much for a dollar, but in this case, you can get a trip to the slammer. Speaking of dumb criminals, a woman in York, Nebraska, Megan Nuss is her name, is in trouble with the law for reportedly forging a doctor's note to avoid a drug test at a probation hearing. Police say Ms. Nuss forged the note, and they say the dead giveaway were the spelling errors in the note purportedly from the doctor, and the fact that Ms. Nuss spelled out the doctor's name instead of a signature. She spelled out the doctor's name. Investigators thought this was a little odd that the doctor would spell out his name rather than signing it. So, of course, they reached out to the doctor. They called the doctor to verify, and he said no, it was not him. She actually used an actual doctor's name on the note. They followed up, and he said no, he didn't write any such note. He actually even went so far as to say he didn't know Ms. Nuss. He didn't know this woman at all. She is now charged with first-degree forgery on top of all of her other crimes. She was at a probation hearing, didn't want to take the drug test, and so now she's charged with forgery. Sometimes the criminals just make it too easy. You know what I mean? That's just sometimes. Speaking of dumb things, This is from the International File out of England. A man is suing Apple. I don't have his name. I don't have the names of any of the principals involved in this story. But on the Newswire, an Englishman is suing Apple after his wife found messages between him and another woman on the family computer. He was cheating on her with a lady of the evening, shall we say. And they had exchanged messages, which his wife found on the family computer. Because the man had deleted the messages from his iPhone, he believed that they had been removed from all of the devices linked to the account. However, this was not the case, and the wife filed for divorce after reading about her husband's transgressions. The man sued Apple, arguing that the company failed to inform users that deleting a message on one device does not remove it from all devices. And he is seeking the British equivalent of $6.3 million. rather than taking responsibility for his own infidelity, he's suing Apple. Oh, my goodness. That sounds like something that could happen in America. You know, that's a surprise that actually hasn't happened in this country. And let me see here. Now, this is kind of wild. You know how it's long been said that The Simpsons, the television series The Simpsons, has predicted a lot of major news events over the years. It's uncanny. Some of the things that have been predicted years ahead of when they have actually happened on The Simpsons. And we've seen these, right? You've seen these predictions come true on The Simpsons. Well, I guess turnabout is fair play. A 3,500-year-old Egyptian mummy, the tomb of a 35-year-old Egyptian mummy, has been uncovered, which contains a drawing of a woman that bears a striking resemblance to Marge Simpson. The depiction, the inner lid of the sarcophagus, shows a yellow woman wearing a long green garment and tall blue hair. Sound familiar? She is surrounded by smaller versions of other women wearing similar garb, similar garments. Experts believe the drawing actually shows the woman traveling to the afterlife. But again, bears a striking resemblance to The Simpsons. Not only The Simpsons predicting the future, apparently the Egyptians were predicting The Simpsons. Oh boy, I don't know. It's kind of makes the hairs on the back of your head stand up. It sends chills down your spine. It's crazy. It's unexplained. And finally, in the broken news this morning. Now, how crazy is this? This is actually out of Canada. And this is one of those stories that just leaves you shaking your head. A customer who rented a car at the Calgary airport somehow received a $436 ticket, traffic ticket, for blowing a red light even before picking up the vehicle. The customer rented, this was a story on the online travel website View from the Wing. The customer rented the vehicle for 6 days, starting at 10:30 p.m. However, the Hertz agent, the desk agent, mistakenly logged it into the computer as the rental having started at 10:30 a.m. Didn't pick it up until 10:30 p.m., but they registered it as 10:30 a.m. by mistake. It turns out that the previous customer, who actually had the vehicle at 10:30 a.m., ran a red light at 2:33 in the afternoon. But since the system saw the new customer as having the car at the time, it was his credit card that was hit with the charge. Now, when all of this got sorted out, this is the crazy part. When all of this got sorted out, I mean, you can understand the mistake. It's an easy mistake to make. And okay, fine. We get this all straightened out. So they take it back to Hertz, and they got it straightened out. And while Hertz did agree to remove the extra day's charge, the company refused to void the red light ticket. And the company says that is the last word on the matter. So they agreed that they wouldn't charge him for the day that he didn't have the car, but they're still going to charge him for the ticket. The customer thus far is still on the hook for the ticket, but he says he's not paying. And let's see if this goes to court. But how crazy is that? Hertz admitting their mistake. They removed the extra charge, the charge for the extra day, but not the charge for the ticket. Wow. There you go. That is today's broken news report. Just leaves you shaking your head. Today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Join WFIN Sunday morning at 11 and hear each week's concert in the Riverside Civic Concert Series from the band shell at Riverside Park. This week, the season opener with the Fostoria Community Band. Concerts are at 7 p.m. each Wednesday and on the air Sunday morning at 11, courtesy of Caldwell Banker Flag City. Join us on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. We were talking about schools earlier. This is kind of interesting. According to the digital curriculum provider Imagine Learning, 55% of American educators suggest artificial intelligence, AI, will have a positive impact on their classroom moving forward. 68% of the teachers in the survey said that they would use AI to organize student data. 67% believe it'll be helpful in creating instructional material. 65% think AI can help them with grading. In fact, 38% are already using it to help them grade students' work. AI use in the classroom has jumped 18% since the fall of 2023, according to the company. So that said, and all of the positives that it can bring for educators, 84% of the teachers in the survey are worried that students will use artificial intelligence to cheat. That is up from 72% in 2023. So there's even a greater concern about this. 74% say their students' writing abilities will suffer when they can just prompt the AI chatbot to write a book report. So I seem to remember when I was a kid, we couldn't use calculators in the classroom because you won't always have a calculator with you. Well, now, of course, we do. Maybe someday in the future, you will have AI with you everywhere. So, you know, just something to think about there. So, obviously, it has felt like it for quite some time now, but as of today, summer is officially here. Or it will be at precisely 4:51 this afternoon. That is the arrival of the summer solstice. And as we were mentioning a little bit earlier on the program, this is the beginning of astronomical summer, the summer solstice. Meteorological summer began on June 1st, and Mother Nature, meanwhile, has been telling us all this week, you can assign whatever date you want to it, but I am in charge here, is basically what Mother Nature's been saying. But nonetheless, summer is officially here today, the arrival of the summer solstice. So, with that in mind, joining us this morning with summer fashion tips to help you curate your best warm weather wardrobe, whether we're talking about a weekend away or that big summer soiree, or even just in the office during the warmer weather months. A lot of people trying to stay cool at work these days. Style expert and senior vice president of brand marketing for Lulu's, Patrick Buchanan, is with us now. Patrick, what are this summer's biggest and best fashion trends?
Oh my gosh, there are so many trends this summer, so you can look and feel your absolute best. My favorite trend right now is wearing matching sets. Now, look, if you're going out and you want to have something that's really easy and really stylish, and you only have to throw on a few accessories, a set is always the way to go. My next trend is colors, bright colors. I think it's we're trying to have a red hot summer, and whether you're doing red or blue or yellow or green, there's so many colors that are going to make you feel really bold and beautiful this summer. Now, Chris, you sound like someone who might take inspiration from all the celebs and influencers out there. and this is a trend that I think you might like. This is the preppy trend where, you know, it's taking tennis style and bringing it off the court and running your errands around, looking like a tennis pro, a stylish tennis pro, and taking it off the court. So those are some of my favorite. And then Lulu's has dresses that are so beautiful and can be so lightweight, especially for those hot summer days. And so, to your point earlier, if you're going to a barbecue, if you're going to a wedding, if you're planning your dream vacation, you know, you want to be able to go to your one-stop shop and be able to get all the things that you need for your suitcase in order to make sure that you look really great. And the best part is that, like, I know these dream vacations are not cheap. You know, it's expensive to get to book the flight,
right,
to book the dinner, to book the, you know, like, it's like you're trying to do an activity. And so you don't want to spend all your clothes looking good. And so that's the beauty of Lulu's, is that we offer really affordable fashion. So it's like you can look good and you don't have to break the bank.
And speaking of looking good, you have some outfits to highlight as examples. Tell us what you've got here.
Yes. So I mentioned that sets are really popular this summer. And the set that I'm looking at now is a blue set, and it has these flowy details on it. And it just is like, it's giving Ariel from Little Mermaid. It's like you're just looking beautiful. You're feeling like a goddess. And it's an incredible. So this will be my first set, my go-to set. I mean, if I could wear it, I would wear it every day. The next dress that I'm looking at is, you know, a really beautiful and like a kind of short summer dress. And this is a dress where you can wear it to a day event, and you can wear it to be as a wedding guest. And it's really lightweight, and it has beautiful fabric. And I think it's one of those dresses where it's like, you just look really beautiful and you feel beautiful. My number one tip for the summer, though, is just having the confidence. It's like, you really want to feel beautiful and be confident, because when you are confident in what you have on, it makes everything so much more fun. And so the theme of the summer is, you know, girls want to have fun. The guys can have fun too, but I mean, we just want to have a fun summer, right?
So talk a little bit about building that perfect summer wardrobe. What's the secret to this?
Well, I'm going to give you all my secrets now. I mean, you have to like get your pen and paper out. No, it's not really that difficult. I mean, if you have Instagram, if you have Pinterest, if you're watching TV, what I do is just take inspiration from out in the world. So when you're out and you see something you like, snap a photo of it or go on Pinterest and say something in your mood board and really think about, what is the style that makes me feel really beautiful? What is the style that makes me feel really great? And you likely have worn things or styles that in the past that you like, okay, like, I know I look really great in this silhouette. And so it's like, how do we build on that? And so I think that's the perfect way to have a really banging summer wardrobe, is like taking the things that you know work and adding on to those. And so if you go to lulus.com, you can get all the inspiration you need, whether you're going to, again, a wedding or you're going to the beach. You know, you can find everything in between. And I think that one thing that we really want is things that are transitional. So if you're going from daytime to nighttime, you want looks that can like work all day. And, you know, like, we're trying to just take the carry on. Like, we don't want to check a bag. So it's like, we want looks that also, you know, can fit in one little suitcase. So if you wear the matching sets that I was talking about, you know, it's like, You can wear a matching set, and you can wear it from day to night if you bring the right accessories to be able to make it transitional.
Yeah, that is so important, especially if you are packing for a trip, because it really can make that chore a lot less daunting. Again, Patrick Buchanan, style expert, Senior Vice President of Brand Marketing for Lulu's, with us this morning. Mention again the website where folks can get more fashion inspiration here.
Yes, it's so easy. Lulus.com, LULUS.com. And for all of our first-time customers, we have a treat. I'm not going to come visit you, Chris, and not give you something special. The code is DRESSCODE20LULUS. That'll get you 20% off of your first order at checkout.
Awesome. We will link it up on our webpage as well. Patrick, thanks very much for taking the time. Happy summer.
Happy summer.
And that will finish up our podcast for our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, more top-notch live entertainment coming to the area. Tiffin's Ritz Theater announcing their new season schedule this week. We'll get the scoop. Plus, recipes for those days when it's too hot to cook from Kyra's Kitchen. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.